The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off, so it's you and me. If you want to get in and chat, we would love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE. Busy, busy day ahead. Four women accused. Former New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman of physical abuse. He immediately resigned. That's why I said former. We'll get to that here in just a couple of moments. I just finished reading the New Yorker piece. It's quite long, and I didn't hear about it until I woke up. So just finished reading it here right before we went on the air, so we'll get to that here in just a few moments. Now the Democrat leadership is promoting open borders. This is really interesting. Second in command of the DNC wearing a shirt at a protest that talks about open borders. About a third? I'll get to it here in just a little bit. I believe it's over a third of Democrats believe in open borders. Eric and I, for a long time, have advised the Republican Party to go after that. And if you're going to go after something in 2018, you go after all the things that the Democrats support and that the leadership supports and so many Democrats support. And sorry, you throw it right back at them. If they are bluntly going to come out and support open borders, call them on it. Why? Because I would dare say that as you see, even the polling showing about a little over a third of Democrats, and we'll get to the poll here in just a little bit, believe in open borders, that still means a majority do not. So that coming up here in just a little bit. New study, and you gotta love this one. May be one of the finest studies that has ever been done since the study was done that showed that conservatives give more to charity than liberals. This one, climate skeptics, the climate change deniers, are more eco-friendly and eco-conscious than global warming alarmists. Now, you can sit there and you can look at the methodology of it, and we can argue whether it's accurate or not, but we know the anecdotal evidence is there. And what's the anecdotal evidence? That people like Leonardo DiCaprio can preach one thing and do something else, nobody cares. Al Gore can preach one thing and do another, nobody on the left cares. It's all about imagery. It's not about the substance of a particular issue, but it's about the imagery of it. By the way, we've often talked about ethanol. We've often talked about one of the first big things that the Democrats and Al Gore promoted was what? Ethanol. Ethanol, 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 ethanol. And they finally got it passed, the ethanol mandate. And it was years later when Al Gore said, well, okay, I didn't tell you the truth about ethanol. I lied about it because I wanted to get elected because of the ethanol farmers, but it actually isn't a good thing. We still have the ethanol mandates today. They still exist. And I'll never forget when it was, because remember, the Democrats passed it, but W signed it. And when he did in, I believe it was December of 2007, by the time we got to March of 2008, the leftist environmental groups started coming out and saying, oops, we made a mistake. Something that we had been saying for the longest time, that from farm to tank, you actually put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. you actually put more global warming gases into the atmosphere. And by March of 2008, the liberal group started understanding that, oops, we made a mistake. It shows you that a government, we can actually enact a government policy that does the opposite of what it was intended, and still there is the push to expand the government program. Even though the main cheerleader for it, Al Gore, has long ago said, oh, I lied about it, but nobody cared. On the left, they didn't care. Why? The substance doesn't matter. It's only the imagery. Let us pretend that we're doing the right thing and we're happy. Let's live in our fantasy world of pretend and all is okay. So that coming up here just a little bit. The 2018 National Socialism Conference is coming up this year and apparently is not, well, cost conscious for the proletariat. That's the working class. Yeah, apparently it's quite expensive to go to the National Socialist Conference. You would think that that would be something that would, hey, it's just a buck to get in. Or, hey, make it free. Or have somebody else pay for it. No, apparently it's quite expensive if you wish to attend it. Here's a headline. This may be my favorite of the day. And my first reaction when I saw the headline. The average American works more than the medieval peasant. Yeah, but they were peasants. Their life sucked. That's the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that one. Social Security beneficiaries topped 62 million for the first time. The accusation is that House Democrats are lying to their constituents. They're actually lying to Democrats in order to fundraise. Well, that's not the first time, but we'll get to that. Oh, by the way, Chelsea Manning is also running for office and has a platform. Again, open borders. Latest from Hawaii. Man, you see some of the pictures of the lava flows. Oh, man. The one. Yeah, I know everybody asked the question if you saw the one. It was all over social media where the lava flow is coming down the road and it hits a fence. And it's a metal fence, and it starts coming, you know, going through the openings of the fence and then burst the fence open. But then the next one, after it, the lava flows coming down the street, and there's a white car right there. A lot of people asked, why didn't somebody move the car? And nobody, you know, that car will never be used again. But when you look at it, it's just horrifying. I can't imagine. Having to go through that. The pictures are spectacular, but it has to be just horrific to be there in Hawaii. So that coming up here in just a little bit. Plus, the Iran deal and the president, what will he do on it tomorrow? And if you want the height of hypocrisy out there from the left, it's on the whole Logan Act. You know, John Kerry's spokesperson really basically came out and just said, he's doing it because he's very concerned about the deal that he made. Basically admitted, yeah, he's doing it. There's no screams. Do you remember the screams of the Democrats and the left for Michael Flynn and accusing him of breaking the Logan Act? Which, again, nobody's ever been prosecuted on. That's what, from the 1800s? And that's where a private citizen isn't supposed to mess around when it comes to, you know, what the federal government is attempting to do with other countries. And as many people have said, and we've said it before, clearly if it was ever tested, it would be found unconstitutional. You can go and talk to whoever you want as an American citizen. So, but that's not the point. The point is that the left that was screaming it now is completely and totally, as far as I know, I didn't see anything yesterday on social media, 100% quiet on that issue. So that and more we will get to here in just a little bit, and a bunch more too. There's so many other things that are going on. I just finished reading the New Yorker column, four women accused New York Attorney General of physical abuse. Eric Schneiderman, has raised his profile as a voice against sexual misconduct. Now, after suing Harvey Weinstein, he faces a hashtag MeToo reckoning of his own. Jane Meyer and Ronan Farrow writing this. And, you know, they 3 hours after the publication of the story, Schneiderman resigned as Attorney General. You can't find a guy more, you know, left than Attorney General, you know, Eric Schneiderman. Somebody who, you know, we had just mentioned climate change. We'll get to that here in a little bit. But the whole climate change issue, he was somebody who promoted leftist politics from the Attorney General seat, like you would expect an Attorney General from New York. Let me just read you a couple of this. It's a long article, so it's impossible for me to read the whole article. But just a couple of sentences and paragraphs here. Eric Schneiderman, New York Attorney General, has long been a liberal Democratic champion of women's rights. He recently has become an outspoken figure in the hashtag MeToo movement against sexual harassment as New York's state's highest ranking law enforcement officer. Schneiderman, who is 63, has used his authority to take legal action against disgraced film mogul Harvey Weinstein and demand greater compensation for the victims of Weinstein's alleged sexual crimes. Last month, when the Times and this magazine were awarded a joint Pulitzer Prize for coverage of sexual harassment, Schneiderman issued a congratulatory tweet praising the brave women and men who spoke up about sexual harassment they had endured at the hands of powerful men. Without these women, he noted, there would not be a critical national reckoning underway. Now Schneiderman faces a reckoning of his own. As his prominence as a voice against sexual misconduct has risen, so has the distress of four women with whom he had romantic relationships or encounters. They include Schneiderman of having subjected them to non-consensual physical violence. All have been reluctant to speak out, fearing reprisal. But two of the women, Michelle Manning Barish and Tanya Selveritinen, I may have that name wrong, have talked to the New Yorker on record because they feel that doing so could protect other women. They allege he repeatedly hit them, often drinking, frequently in bed, and never with their consent. They categorize the abuse he inflicted on them as assault. They did not report their allegations to police at the time, but both say they eventually sought medical attention after having been slapped hard across the ear and face and also choked. Selveritinen says Schneiderman warned her that he could have her followed and her phones tapped, and both say he threatened to kill them if they broke up with him. Schneiderman's spokesperson said he never made any of those threats. A third former romantic partner of Schneiderman said that he also repeatedly subjected her to non-consensual physical violence, but she told them she is still too frightened to come forward. The New Yorker has independently vetted the accounts that they gave of her allegations. A fourth woman, an attorney who held prominent positions in the New York legal community, said Schneiderman made an advance towards her. When she rebuffed him, he slapped her across the face with such force that it left a mark that lingered the next day. She recalls screaming in surprise and pain and began to cry and say she felt frightened. She is asked to remain unidentified, but shared a photograph with the injury with the New Yorker. And if you go through this whole thing, it's the piece I have here is 16 pages long. I didn't even get through a full page of it, but you go through it and you're like, whoa. I mean, this is physical assault. They accuse him of using their prescription medication. I think it was a Xanax, one of them. Manning versus Schneiderman also took prescription tranquilizers and often asked her to refill a prescription that she had for Xanax so he could reserve about half the pills for himself. And they go through the fact, talking to these women who are also, you know, a couple of them liberal activists who say, you know, they were immediately attracted to him because they're all liberal activists and all this. And then the violent encounters, you can read the article yourself. It's online, are quite brutal. And the descriptions are actually quite brutal of what he is accused of. But he resigned just 3 hours after the publication of this story. We'll keep you updated on this story and more, all coming up, plus your calls and comments. If you'd like to get in, we would love to hear from you. Lines open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, this segment for Cobra Electronics. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off, so it's you and me, 866-90-RED-EYE. Just one more paragraph that I want to read you from the New Yorker piece about former New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who resigned almost immediately after this story came out in the New Yorker. Four women accuse New York's Attorney General of physical abuse, talking about the two of the women who publicly came forward with their names. There's two other women who also came forward but kept their names out of it. It said, over the past year, both watched with admiration as other women spoke out about sexual misconduct. But as Schneiderman used the authority of his office to assume a major role in the hashtag MeToo movement, their anguish and anger grew. In February, 4 months after the first stories about Weinstein broke, Schneiderman announced that his office was filing a civil rights suit against him. At a press conference, he denounced Weinstein, saying, "We have never seen anything as despicable as what we've seen right here." On May 2nd, at the direction of Governor Andrew Cuomo, Schneiderman launched an investigation into the past handling of criminal complaints against Weinstein by the Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., and the New York City Police Department. In 2015, Vance declined to bring criminal charges against Weinstein, saying that he lacked sufficient evidence, a decision criticized by activist groups. In a speech, Cuomo explained that sexual assault complaints must be pursued aggressively and to the fullest extent of the law. The expanding investigation of the Weinstein case put Schneiderman at the center of one of the most significant sexual misconduct cases in recent history. Schneiderman's activism on behalf of feminist causes has increasingly won him praise from women's groups. On May 1st, the New York-based National Institute of Reproductive Health honored him as one of the three champions of choice at its annual fundraising luncheon. Accepting the award, Schneiderman said, quote, "If a woman cannot control her body, she is not truly equal," end of quote. But as Manning Barish sees it, quote, "You cannot be a champion of women when you are hitting them and choking them in bed and saying to them you're a blank whore," end of quote. She said of Schneiderman's involvement in the Weinstein investigation, "How can you put a perpetrator in charge of the country's most important sexual assault case?" Selveritam describes Schneiderman as a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde figure and says seeing him lauded as a supporter of women has made her feel sick. This is a man who has staked his entire career, his personal narrative, on being a champion for women publicly, but he abuses them privately. He needs to be called out. So there you go. We'll see where this goes. Schneiderman has denied it, said that everything that happened was consensual, is what his spokesperson said. Don't know if these women or there's any chance of any criminal charges being filed because of these accusations. I just don't know it at the time, but we'll keep you updated on that story. But again, breaking news, the New York Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, four women accuse him of physical abuse. He resigns less than three hours after that story came out from the New Yorker. 866-90-RED-EYE.
they're willing to have the conversation. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley. He has the morning off. I'm Gary McNamara. Just you and me, if you'd like to get in, we would love to talk to you. Just talking about the story that came out, late yesterday afternoon, last night. I know that when I went to sleep at 5 o'clock, I hadn't seen it yet. So when I woke up, I went, oh, boy. But four women accuse New York's Attorney General of physical abuse. Eric Schneiderman, New Yorker Peace, Ronan Farrow, who's done a lot with the Weinstein thing, also part of the duo that wrote the article. A lot of specific details in the article that was written yesterday, and within 3 hours, the Attorney General resigned. He was, you know, the lead going after Harvey Weinstein in New York, and one of the liberal leaders was viewed as one of the national leaders of the hashtag MeToo movement. Now, what these four women are accusing him of is physical assault. And when you read the article, you see that they get quite descriptive as to the force of the physical assault and even the choking. And one of the things that's brought up in the article is that he was one of the proponents of a strangulation law in New York. And, and the fact is he's being accused of choking these women. Just an incredible turn of events in such a short time. To you we go. Let's go to Paul in New York City, 866-90 Red Eye. Paul, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
What's up, Gary? You know, I think the last time I talked to you, your buddy wasn't there either.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
I just want to get on my comment. I'm law enforcement, and I think that everybody who is the extra mile sick with this situation. Since 1999, New York has been blessed with two degenerates. One who spent over $80,000 on prostitutes, Spitzer.
Elliot Spitzer.
And now Schneiderman. Who apparently likes to assault, abuse, and rape women. And,
I will say this. There are no rape allegations in the story. It's physical abuse is what they're alleging. I didn't see rape in the story.
Unless I misunderstood what I read, the one woman was pushed onto the bed, assaulted, and
right. I'm just stating that I didn't see where rape appeared. That the accusation of the word rape appeared in the story. That I didn't see that. So
yeah, my comment is though, I find it ironic that the left, which shuns religion in every way, especially Schneiderman, who's a radical progressive nut. Are the ones in our society that need God and, religion the most.
Well, yeah, many people who denounce religion do need it the most. That's a great point. Thanks so much for your call. 866-90 Red Eye, if you'd like to get in. Yeah, you brought up Elliot Spitzer and the prostitute scandal, and it just popped into my mind. I remember that when he was caught, and it was because, remember, he made a phone call on a cell phone to one of the prostitutes. Remember, he was in Niagara Falls, and I'll never forget where they showed the parking lot where he made the cell phone call. And I went, I know that parking lot. Wait a minute. And it was the parking lot of a club where I used to be a club DJ. I went, wow, there it is. And it's apparently where he made that phone call. Look, the allegations are out. Very, very, descriptive allegations. We'll see where this goes from this particular point and how the state of New York responds to it tomorrow, how Andrew Cuomo responds to it tomorrow. What's going to happen in these particular cases? Look, without question, it's assault. I mean, there's no when you read it, the accusations are assault. You have two women that have come forward with their names. The other two have come forward but did not want their names disclosed because they were too scared. Yes, one of the allegations is he used his position to, you know, to tell them, you know, he was the chief law enforcement officer of New York. Their claims are he used that to intimidate them into silence about the physical assaults. So when you look at, are these chargeable offenses? Yes. From what I can see, the allegations are all chargeable criminal offenses of assault. So we'll see where the state of New York goes on it, but I would expect that a criminal investigation is going to begin on this. I can't see it not beginning. Some of the incidences took place, 2015, 2016, 2017. So statute of limitations probably won't apply to it. So don't know how this will resolve itself, but I would say that probably without question there will be a criminal investigation that will start up on this. Whether it's, I guess who would have the jurisdiction there? Would it be the state police? Would it be where the incidents took place, where they actually took place? Might there be, depending on where the incidents took place, a number of investigations with also the New York State Police being involved in it? I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if in the next couple of days. Probably this week, you see that there is an investigation that is opened by law enforcement of New York, because these allegations are serious allegations of physical abuse, from, you know, slapping in the face so hard where marks were there the next day, to slapping at the ear where the next day the woman claims that there was blood actually in her ears from choking, from throwing downs. You know, throwing the women down. So, I can see it happening. And yeah, I mean, you can make all the. Because there's going to be a lot of statements being made that here's a guy who is, you know, this is the guy who's the ultimate in the imagery of the we have to fight for women. You know, he's the guy that is going after Weinstein. He's the guy that's getting the award from all of these women's groups. He is the one that's saying, you know, what Weinstein did is the most despicable thing, you know, one could imagine, imagine being done. And the accusations against him, actually, when it comes to physical assault, the actual physical hitting of women might be a stronger case than anything against Weinstein here at this moment. And these women said that's what really got to them, is the fact that they saw the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. They saw, on one hand, there he is promoting the fact that he is the leader to help stop this kind of thing from happening. He's one of the leaders of the hashtag MeToo movement. And as they all say, he was completely the opposite. He was a perpetrator, and he was the one that was in charge of the biggest investigation of the hashtag MeToo movement in the United States right now. The case that kicked it all off, and here he was in charge, and the two women at that point, just, you know, two of the women that came forward with their names, and the other two that have come forward without releasing their names, said it was just, you know, too much to bear, that they felt that they needed to come forward in this case. So that's where we are. All right, coming up here. Now Democratic leadership is promoting open borders. A new study out there, climate skeptics are more eco-friendly and eco-conscious than global warming alarmists. And the latest on the Iran deal, the president will be making a decision tomorrow on it. Plus your calls and comments all coming up, too. If you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley. He has a morning off. I'm Gary McNamara. I'm sorry, I just started reading this this column by Robert Samuelson on the Senator Bernie Sanders job guaranteed boondoggle, and brings up some great questions. And in the article, talking about, you know, how would you set up this guaranteed jobs program? That now he found another survey. We found one that showed that 46% of Americans liked it. He found one where 52% of Americans thought it'd be a great idea. The government guaranteed jobs, and they say it's, you know, clear how it, you know, would work. They did say, though, that the website of the Sanders Institute looks at a guaranteed jobs plan devised by the economists at Bard College's Economics Institute, and they suggest how the job guarantee may function. All right, under the plan, anyone needing a job would get a uniform wage of $15 an hour plus health insurance, probably Medicare, and other benefits, importantly, child care. When fully deployed, the program would create 15 million public service jobs, estimate the economists. This would be huge, about five times the number of existing federal jobs, 2.8 million, and triple the number of state government jobs, 5 million. Although the federal government would pay the cost, the program would be administered by the states, localities, and nonprofit organizations, which would design jobs and enroll beneficiaries. Some jobs mentioned by the economists: cleaning up vacant properties, overseeing programs for new mothers and at-risk youths, tree planting, and weatherization of homes. To be sure, there's a real problem here. Even when the reported unemployment is as low as it is now, 3.9%, millions of Americans remain unemployed or underemployed. They often have poor skills, wrestle with drug or alcohol problems, or are so discouraged that they've dropped out of the labor force. The job guarantee appeal is obvious. 52% of Americans in the Civis poll for The Nation, which is a liberal publication, found 52% in favor of it. Because the trouble is, there is a vast gap between rhetoric and reality. And they mentioned that Kevin Drum from Mother Jones, you know, leftist magazine, even notices the problems. Quote, even our lefty comrades in Social Democratic Europe don't guarantee jobs for everyone. It would cost a fortune. It would be massively disruptive to the private labor market. It would most certainly tank productivity. And it's unlikely in the extreme that the millions of workers in this program could ever be made fully competent at their jobs. End of quote. And that comes from one of the most liberal publications in the United States. They said many problems are unavoidable. The proposal would add to an already swollen federal budget deficit. The Bard economists put the annual cost at about $400 million. We saw last week another liberal think tank said over $500 billion. The reason is Medicare. If it's provided for those making $15 an hour, there'll be pressures to provide it for most workers. Otherwise, uncovered workers might stage a political rebellion or switch from today's low-paying private sector jobs to better-paid public service jobs. The Wall Street Journal's Greg Ip notes the same logic applies to child care subsidies. Then they go into the inflation problem with it, and how the Fed would look at it. And then some of the greatest questions here, all right, about a guaranteed jobs program. Does the federal government have the managerial competence to oversee the creation of 15 million new jobs? The 15 million jobs would equal 1 in 10 existing jobs. Is there a skills mismatch between what the jobless can do and what actually needs to be done? Remember, the candidates for the public sector jobs are among the least skilled workers. Is there a similar geographic mismatch? Say the jobless are in Michigan and the jobs are in Arizona. This too seems to be problematic. Here's the best question. Can any of these workers be disciplined? If the job is guaranteed. You can't fire people. So as Eric was the first to say, he said, no, it's not going to be a jobs program. It'll end up being a welfare program. Just give money. They'd sit there and go, this is a massive failure. Just give people the free money because they're not productive and they're not doing anything anyway. That's the greatest point. Can you have a guaranteed jobs program? A guaranteed jobs program means how can you be disciplined? Well, I got fired from my job, but we'll guarantee you another one. Well, I won't show up. Doesn't matter. How do you discipline anybody in a guaranteed job? I love Robert Samuelson here, the best line. Americans are suckers for great crusades that make the world safe for the pursuit of happiness. In this context, Sanders' job guarantee seems a masterstroke.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has a morning off. This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Helping you run smart is Freightliner's number one goal. Welcome and good morning. Thanks for being here. You and me, if you want to get into the discussion, would love to chat. In other news, besides the breaking news last night of Attorney General of New York Eric Schneiderman resigning after the physical abuse complaints from four women were brought to light in a article in the New Yorker, and we'll get to more of that coming up a little bit later on here in the show that was breaking news from last night. And the reason that that has caused so much attention is he's the chief law enforcement officer of New York. And the fact is, he was the key. He is the lead in the Harvey Weinstein prosecution. So, you know, going after Harvey Weinstein and viewed as one of the leaders of the hashtag MeToo movement. And so we'll get to more of that coming up here in just a little bit. Other news out there, congressional Democrats are now lying to their supporters about the Russian investigation in an effort to pump up their fundraising efforts ahead of the midterm elections. This from the Daily Caller and Peter Hassan. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee sent out a pair of fundraising emails on Monday that claimed if they got enough signatures, President Donald Trump would be forced to interview with special counsel Robert Mueller. If we can gather 1 million signatures, it will force Trump to cooperate with the investigation once and for all, read the email. That's false. We quote, we need to gather 1 million signatures for Robert Mueller to force Trump to testify, end of quote, read another email. We're the only ones left who can help Robert Mueller. Also false. Said the BuzzFeed reporter Dominic Holden, Democrats can't claim a moral high ground on telling the truth when their congressional campaign arm is often lying. Pointing to the misleading emails, if Democrats care so much about the truth, they should practice it in their own emails. You know, that would be an interesting question. Because Democrats have been the only response we have gotten from any Democrats or any liberals is on the and this was maybe a month ago or so. The only really response, going after Trump is the Stormy Daniels thing. I don't remember the last time that we got a Democrat stating And I mean, in any form of communication that we have, coming out and saying, we got to continue with this Russian investigation. Democrats aren't saying that anymore. Democrats, really, in Congress, maybe once in a while, but even, you know, you think about even Adam Schiff, very, very quiet. Very quiet on it. But the rank and file Democrats, you really don't hear anything from them. And I'm talking about the constituents. We don't hear anything from them on this. So it'd be interesting to see that if Democrats, if you get that campaign letter, you like, yes, we need more transparency. Let all the information out. The FBI should release everything that they have. Because we know Trump is guilty. Is any Democrat saying that? Think about that. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about how the Republicans are stating to the Justice Department and the FBI, let the stuff out. And I really wonder how even, you know, the inside the beltway, and I'm not talking about the media, but the inside, you know, the Democrats that pay attention that aren't part of the media, aren't part of the political process, but they're really in tune as to what's going on. I really wonder if you polled them and say, do you wish for full transparency? Do you want the FBI and the Justice Department to release everything so for once and for all we know exactly what went on with Russian collusion? Would they say yes? Eric and I have said many times, we want it all released, irrespective of what it says. Why? Because on this, the American public deserves transparency across the board. And I know some Democrats might say, yeah, but things have changed over the last year. Well, yeah, things have changed. We've seen that the only collusion by Democrat standards is by Democrats. You're right. But we were calling for everything to be released even from the beginning. We were asking the questions from the very, very, very beginning. And I believe that we look at things like this. And look, I'm not saying we're not partisan. We're conservative libertarian without question. We'd never pretend that we're not. But I think that we do look at these things with an investigative mind and say if there's law breaking, find out where the law breaking is. If there's people that have done something wrong, if there are people that actually colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. And the only evidence of that so far is Democrats. And by the way, since we have said that, Democrats don't, I've never gotten an email. Nobody has said, well, it's not true. Well, they've tried. You know, we had one email I got. I don't know about Eric, but I only got one email maybe about 2 months ago. Collusion isn't a crime. And the guy was pounding us on collusion. I said, you don't understand the context that we're coming from. We're talking, this whole thing is based, when we talk about collusion, the Democrats came up with the definition of collusion. We're simply following the Democrats' definition of collusion. What the Democrats are saying is wrongdoing, they're the benchmark. They're the ones that set the original allegation. We're following that. Once we said that to the guy, there was no more comment from him. You know, we do this debate thing quite often, and we make sure that, you know, we set the premise of everything. But when you talk about, remember, the original was that the Republicans, Trump campaign, Trump and the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians to hack the election. Then it became the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. By that definition, that they view as being bad, that must be investigated, the only people that have done that is the Democrats, the Democrat National Committee and the Hillary campaign. Funneling the money through Perkins Coie to Fusion GPS to Christopher Steele to get unverified information from the Russians in order to take down the Trump campaign, and when they couldn't do that, to try to destroy the legitimacy of the election. Once we break it down like that, nobody disagrees with us. So I just wonder with the fundraising, I wonder if that's effective. I wonder by saying, look, we can get Trump to cooperate with the investigation once and for all. Now, maybe they might be for that because they hope that Trump will mess up and they can get Trump on perjury charges. But on Russian collusion? Really? Does anybody believe? Does any Democrat believe that there's any evidence that Trump colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election? Or is it just the opposite? That would be interesting to see whether Democrats actually buy into that. So there you go. In other news out there, I'm going to play this audio cut first. We got other stuff to talk about, but I want to play this audio cut because the president, in all likelihood, will make a decision on Iran tomorrow, whether to stay in the Iran deal or not. And most believe he will pull out, especially after Benjamin Netanyahu's presentation showing that the Iranians lied in the beginning. They were not honest about what they had, and therefore the whole deal is moot to begin with since they lied. It's if you make a contract with somebody and you lie about, you know, if you lie in the contract and then you come up with something, that the contract can be null and void, the same thing. But the interesting thing is the fact that we found out that John Kerry is still trying to lobby not only the Iranians but also the Europeans to force to force the president to change his mind from the outside, which means you would have these foreign leaders, including the Iranians. He met with the Iranian foreign minister twice in the last couple of months, and with the German president, the French president, to try to convince the president not to pull out of the Iran deal. And so obviously the Logan Act came up, and how the Democrats screamed last year that the Logan Act applied to Michael Flynn and he should be prosecuted because he was a private citizen who was talking to a Russian diplomat after the election and after the incoming administration was communicating with different governments, which was absurd even by the definition of the Logan Act. But if there's a definition that fits the Logan Act to the point, it would be what Kerry's doing. He's a private citizen. It's not an incoming administration. And he is trying to go around through private doors what the administration is attempting to do. Now, we have always said publicly the Logan Act is bogus. If it was ever tested, and it's never been tested because nobody's really been prosecuted on it, it would fail, I believe, because you can say whatever you want as a private American citizen to anybody. And so the Logan Act, you have freedom of speech. You can sit there and I can communicate. You know, I could communicate with anybody I want, and you could communicate with anybody you want and say, I think what the president's doing stinks, and I'm an American citizen. And it wouldn't pass constitutional muster. But, again, this is going by what the Democrats said. Again, we use their definition. It is their premise that was set that Michael Flynn, the Logan Act, he needs to be prosecuted. We know. We heard it on the air here. Yeah, Kerry's spokesperson yesterday said, oh, yeah, he's trying to save it. I mean, they admitted that he's doing it. And I want to play this here from Brett Baer on with the Federalist Molly Hemingway yesterday on Fox News about all of this.
Molly, it seems that, you know, John Kerry is fighting to save the deal that he negotiated.
Well, and it's also interesting because for a year and a half, we've had everyone in the media and law enforcement claim with a straight face that there's something called the Logan Act, which is this 18th century law that prohibits people from doing freelance work with foreign governments. It is clearly unconstitutional. It would never be enforced. And yet it was used to query Mike Flynn, and contrary to what James Comey said in his interview with you, that was the interview where the FBI agent said that he gave no evidence of lying, and yet it was because they were doing a Logan Act query, supposedly because he shouldn't have been talking to Ambassador Kislyak as part of his duties.
As the incoming security advisor.
They said that they were really concerned. And here you have John Kerry, who has no role in the administration, doing freelance work trying to save a deal that is completely contravening the goal of the Trump administration. And all those people who were claiming that the Logan Act was a real thing are oddly silent right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that special? 866-90-RED-EYE.
When it comes to proper tire care and maintenance, what can you do to improve fuel economy? Jason Evans is Director of Store Operations for GCR Tires and Service, and he tells us.
Fuel economy is certainly something on the top of everybody's mind. So I think the industry in general understands, beginning to understand the importance of things like air pressure. But just to throw an idea out there that maybe not all our listeners hear all the time, is check your tread depths. Check your tread depths, particularly on dual wheel positions where tires are bolted together and essentially forced to rotate down the road at the same speed, because for $2 in your local truck stop, you can find a tread depth gauge. Anything beyond 1/8 of an inch difference, or commonly referred to as 4/32 in the tire industry, between dual positions can really add to rolling resistance. Not only does it add to rolling resistance, it tears up your tires faster, and in a lot of cases, it's a similar condition in terms of a fuel economy as having maybe a brake dragging. That may be a tidbit out there for the listeners to really key in on, because mismatched tread depths on duals can really add to rolling resistance.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, many of us are concerned about the direction that the country is going. For example, the economy. What are we going to do when it comes to trade? The Iran deal, and what is the president going to do there? North Korea, which is an important issue out there. Let's just take a brief listen to some of the important things that they're talking about with Sarah Sanders yesterday at the daily press briefing at the White House.
China's top economic advisor, the vice premier, will be coming here next week to continue the discussions with the president's economic team, and we'll keep you posted as those discussions are ongoing. Stephen.
Sarah, in its front page story this morning, the Washington Post, among many things, reported that there are persistent rumors that Mrs. Trump does not live in this White House and that she lives with her parents somewhere in the suburbs. What do you make of those rumors?
I make of the fact that just when you think the Washington Post can't get things any more wrong, they do, and that is an outrageous and ridiculous claim. The First Lady lives here at the White House. We see her regularly, and I think that's something that belongs in tabloid gossip, not on the front pages of the Washington Post, and I hope that they'll do better next time. Peter.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner, helping you run smart is Freightliner's number one goal. Sorry, I heard that audio cut earlier today, and I just thought I got to work it in somehow. All the important things to deal with. It shows you, again, the mindset inside of Washington, inside the Beltway. And I think it's important just to recognize that. What the average person is concerned about and is talking about is a far, 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 far cry from some of the things that are important to those inside the Beltway, inside the media, in D.C. And I just think that's important to point that out. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, now Democratic leadership is supporting open borders, and we just find this fascinating because we'll have you the latest polling on open borders and how many Democrats actually, when polled, how many actually believe in open borders. We're not talking about, you know, having a more liberal immigration plan. They want open borders. And the leadership of the Democrat Party, the DNC, they want open borders. And we'll show you more evidence of that coming up, and ask this question that if you're just a Democrat out there, and I seem to have a lot of questions for Democrats, never get many answers because they're in hiding right now. But I just wonder how many rank and file Democrats, when you look at the polls, they don't. Because when you look at what groups wish to limit immigration the most, there's some of the most loyal demographics that support the Democrats. And as we have said with Republicans, it's just so disappointing because their only job is to take these core issues and an attempt to peel off more Democrats every single election cycle. Because that's the whole point. Democrats may believe they win on rhetoric, but they're certainly not winning on the substance of ideas. The left is not winning on the substance of ideas. Open borders, just having open borders where anybody can come and go, is not what the vast majority of the American public want. In fact, when they hear it, they become furious that the Democrat leadership wants to just say, oh, forget about borders. Anybody can come in whenever they want, and we'll give them anything that they want. Probably not in the mainstream of American thought, you think? And also another latest study being done, which is just hilarious. To me, it's hilarious, at least because it does show the hypocrisy of the left. All coming up, plus your calls and comments. If you'd like to get in, we have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Their minds are always working. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And this hour brought to you by Freightliner, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, it's days like yesterday where I realize I'm officially a Texan. You know, I grew up in New York, but I lived all over the country. Been here now. What is it, next week? This time, 18 years. Lived here in the 80s for 3 years. So we're now up to almost 21 years. Yeah, wow. Does that beat? No, it doesn't beat New York yet. I still spent more time there. But I've lived all over the country. But I realize that officially, without question, the evidence was there yesterday. I'm a Texan. And that's because when I got up yesterday, the temperature is getting hotter. And so this is the time where, you know, the grass starts growing, everything starts getting out of control. And it's like, this is the week I got to get everything done outside. I mean, all the lawn work's got to get done, everything. And there's, you know, the trimming the bushes. I got a tree out back, a small tree that I like to keep small. So I've got to get trimmed here very soon. Mulch. You got to mulch. I got a, you know, mulch going on, and then one of my big trees out front, I've got to trim a little bit, plus the normal grass cutting and all that other stuff I've got to take care of. So there I am out yesterday, and it's about 2 in the afternoon. I'm doing all this stuff. And I walk in the house, and you know, the TV's on, the weather's on, and it's now 93 degrees. You got to be kidding me, really? Doesn't seem hot at all. And at that point, I realized, wow. Now, I know the humidity must be low, but still, for me, that freaked me out a little bit. I was like, wow. Because it was just a little while ago, it was actually pretty cold, and it's still a little cool at night. Actually, it's more uncomfortable. What's going on with the air conditioning? All of a sudden, it got hot here. Let's recharge with the Freon, could we please, to our air conditioning here at the studios. It's comfortable. It's not bad. I know I'm a Texan. I'm now a creature of the South, because it's like, wow, 93. So if 93 doesn't feel bad and I'm out and about doing stuff, then hey, 100's not going to be bad. You know, we haven't had one of those summers where we've had like a month over 105. I think I'm ready for it. If we have it, I'm ready for it. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE. Oh, man, I'm just speaking of Mother Nature. Oh, some of the scenes from Hawaii, from Kilauea. You have to say, was some of the most incredible scenes of Mother Nature that you would look at and say, how majestic, how beautiful, if it wasn't so destructive. And you know, the people living on the island having to be relocated, their possessions lost, and all of that. But wow, how impressive. How impressive is Mother Nature? When I sat at, and I used to love when I lived in Portland, Oregon, one of my favorite things, besides golfing out there during the summer, because the summers are great, was hiking on the mud flows of Mount St. Helens. And was the Johnston Observatory. It was about 4 miles from the center of the crater, but it's up so far in the air. You looked up. That was one of the times. I don't get the same feeling when I'm in an airplane, even though I will say this. So when I flew with the Thunderbirds in the F-16, and we took, and I lived in Oregon at the time, and people listening on Freedom 970 out of Portland, we took off from the Hillsboro Airport outside of Portland, and it was a cloudy day, so he was trying to find a hole in the cloud. He goes, "Okay, we're going." He goes, "Ah, there's a hole in the cloud. We're going straight up." And we might not have gone straight up, but it sure felt like we were going straight up at a 90 degree level. So we go up through the clouds. All of a sudden, turn the plane, the jet upside down, and we're flying upside down. And I can see through the cloud cover. I can see Mount Rainier. You know, was it 250 miles away? And that was quite impressive, but still not as impressive as when I sat at the Johnston Observatory and looked into the crater of Mount St. Helens. And as I told Eric the other day, and I said it on the air, I believe, I felt so insignificant. You realize at that point, wow, my life really doesn't matter, does it? When you look at, when it's just so impressive and so big and so majestic, yet so, as we found out in 1980, so lethal. But I've always, I took a geology in college my first year and took it pass fail because I didn't care. And I probably got a D in it, but I passed it because I could take that course pass fail. And I had no interest in it whatsoever. I remember thinking about the layers of the earth. Could care less. And it just shows you how you change in life. I am so fascinated by that. Whenever I get asked, well, if you could do something else besides radio, what would you do? And I said, well, the two things I would probably enjoy most doing is a basketball coach. And that comes from the 2 years I did the eighth grade basketball team. Just absolutely loved it. Loved it. Loved it. Loved coaching better than actually playing. And a geologist. I would love. Now, I wouldn't want to be close to it. And that's the one problem as a geologist. If you're studying volcanoes, you have to get near them when they're active. And I probably, I won't ever have to do that, but I probably would have been willing to do that. But I wish that, I have no regrets in my life. It's just, wow, would have been cool, though. Because I have no regrets of the direction. I would rather be doing this than anything else. But still, I wish I would have paid a little bit more attention to it and would have had more of an interest when I was in college of geology. But you realize the power that is underneath the crust of the earth and how really small and insignificant we are. And how powerful the universe can be. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE. Get in, let us head to you. We go to Roger in Champaign, Illinois, about the Russia investigation and more. Roger, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. How you doing?
Doing fine.
What's up?
Just been listening to you the last couple of weeks, 3 weeks. You got a good show.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that. You're on the air.
My question is,
yes,
as Jeff Sessions, why doesn't he give Rosenstein an ultimatum to give the documents that the oversight committees want by like 1 p.m. and then remove him for obstruction of justice? And then after he does that, remove him for the conflict of interest that he has in this case and appoint a different person.
Well, obstruction of justice is a criminal charge, so that, you know, this is more political than a criminal element. This is done in the duty of the job, so it would not fit obstruction of justice. But what it, even though morally it might be obstruction of justice, it isn't legally. But as we have said all along, the problem with it is he recused himself. And I saw a column the other day where somebody said, look, Trump should just say either do it or we declassify everything.
That
I look at it and we declassify, because I read the other day that I forgot who wrote the column, but it was an interesting column that said, hey, let's stop blaming Congress. Let's stop blaming everything. This is in Trump's control. He should do this. Now, the problem, if he does that, he'll be accused of interfering. And that's the problem that wasn't addressed in that. But I think a great point would be, how could you accuse Trump of interfering if he says, let all the information be open and be transparent? And I order you to, and I order you as head of, because the one thing that they're doing is they're saying, you know, they're actually using executive branch authority, saying we don't need to give you this because we're part of the executive branch to Congress, you know, on what they believe is the information on the FISA warrants. Well, Trump could come out and say, I order you to do that. I order the Justice Department to give to the House of Representatives what they want, run it by the White House. We'll look at it and we'll approve what we want to go, because one thing that the Justice Department said is claimed we ran it by the White House and the White House agreed with us. The White House, this from Kimberly Strassel, The Wall Street Journal the other day, she wrote, no, the White House said they want it released. They want to do whatever they can do to release that information to Congress. So there is that train of thought that it's time for the executive branch to get involved in an area where they wouldn't be accused of tampering, because you're not trying to hide anything. This would be the left saying you're interfering with an investigation by ordering transparency. Really?
That would be good. I'd like to see this stuff all out, because, man, it's just a three-ring circus.
Yeah, so would I. I mean, I would like to see it all out. I want to know the truth. And I think there are probably a lot of Americans that wish to know the truth on this. There are things that we get outraged about and that we get concerned about, and I view at times that we are focused on the wrong things. I look at the possibility, and I think Americans, and I think they are concerned, and probably when they think about it, infuriated, that if it did happen, if the scenario is that you do have a group of bureaucrats in law enforcement and the Justice Department, that were cooperating with the DNC, the Hillary campaign, and the Obama administration to do whatever they could to monitor the activities of their opponents by using the FISA court system, by dredging up unverified gossip from the Russians to change the outcome of the election, and then claiming that the opposition party did exactly what they did, I would believe that most people in America would believe that that is the wrong thing to do and that those people should be held accountable for it. When you break it down, and that's what we do here, when you break it down, and that's what Eric and I have noticed, once you break it down, once you get out of the realm of rhetoric, which I see on all the TV networks, I see it on Fox, I see it on MSNBC, I see it on CNN. Part of the great debate is nobody breaks it down, you know, to the minutia of it and says, here's actually what's going on. Once you do it, there's very little opposition to what the truth is right now. There's very little. Eric and I have noticed this since one of our goals was to actually break down every single issue to the point where you can't debate it. And we find out, and in many issues, we get to that point where people don't even bother to debate it anymore because we have broken it down. And that's what we have done with the whole Russian collusion thing, is break it down to the minutia so the people understand, and then go at it from an investigative point of view. Not from a partisan point of view, but from an investigative point of view. And even though, yeah, we're partisan, I'd always admit that we're partisan, but you know, we're partisan for our ideas that we believe in. We're not partisan. We don't practice tribalism. We don't practice political idolatry. We never have. It's got us in trouble many times from Republicans, going all the way back to George W. Bush. Eric and I weren't working together at the beginning of his term, but we both got the same calls. Your job is to defend the president. No, it's not. And we didn't back then, when we thought President Bush did the wrong things. So, and when I became a talk show host, it was George Herbert Walker Bush, and I disagreed with him plenty of times. I've been doing this now for almost 29 years. So, and then, you know, Clinton, of course, there were tons of things I disagreed with them on. But again, we may be partisan, but it's for our ideas, not for people. And I think probably most of you understand that. At times you've got ticked at us for that, and that's fine. But you can still have an investigative mind and go through it. And when you go through it, most of it's indefensible from the liberal point of view. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. Coming up here following the top of the hour, of course, here on Red Eye Radio, we always want to give support and promote everything that's going on in the left. For example, the National Socialist Conference, which is coming up in July. And we'll give you some of the specific details. Now, some of the details may disappoint some in the proletariat. That's the working class, because you probably can't afford to go. But we'll tell you about it anyway.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and he has the morning off. I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you for being here. Want to briefly talk about this, because we didn't get a chance yesterday to speak on it. But it's good to see that Gina Haspel, the Central Intelligence Agency Deputy Director, did not withdraw her nomination to become the head of the CIA. Of course, the left has been jumping on it, because the vast majority of her career, she's been involved in, covert programs. Actually a spy. So she's been involved in a ton of different covert programs. And the left is now going crazy because she was part, she was there in the Bush administration with the enhanced interrogation program. And so she's being criticized or being told that she's not qualified to do that. Of course, that's a completely bogus argument. And why is it bogus? It's bogus because when you work for the Central Intelligence Agency, you do a lot of things that are not normal and are not done in normal everyday life. And you do it on behalf of protecting the United States of America. And you do it only with the authority of the administration and the approval of Congress, which for the enhanced interrogation techniques, including waterboarding, was approved by the Gang of Eight, which was a bipartisan group of congressional leaders, including the majority and minority leaders. That means Republican and Democrat, the chairman, and the ranking members of the intelligence community, the people that know or are supposed to know, and I say supposed to know because of the problems they are having in getting things that they absolutely, as the representatives of the people, should be getting from the FBI and the Justice Department. But they approved it. No one raised an objection to it. So the fact is, the argument from the Democrats is bogus. And the whole thing, Eric and I had this discussion off the air yesterday, that the whole thing on enhanced interrogation is just like the death penalty. I can't tell you how many people I know that come up and said, you know, I'm not for the death penalty, but in this case I am. Well, then you're for the death penalty. You may vary a little bit and you might say, okay, this deserves a death penalty and this doesn't, or this is such a heinous crime. But it's just that your conditions are a little different. The vast majority of the American public are for enhanced interrogation techniques. No, they're not. Well, depending on the condition, yeah, they would be. Whatever the scenario would be. If you know that somebody has a dirty bomb and is going to set it off in a major city in New York, and your intelligence says it's there, and you have the person who is in essence, a non-combatant, somebody who works for a terrorist organization that you have, who you know is part of the group that's bringing the dirty bomb in, and it's going to go off in the next 24 hours. Oh, yeah, but that's a different scenario. Well, they're all different scenarios. But it means you would approve it under certain conditions. But this whole thing with Gina Haspel has just been bogus to begin with. And I'm glad that the administration stuck behind her. In fact, she offered to withdraw, and apparently it was from inside the White House. They said, no, we wish you to stay, including the president. And that was good to see. Because it's just bogus that, well, she was a part of it, and she shouldn't have been a part of it. Yeah. Right. Do you know what the CIA does? Or do you sit there in your nice, secure home, not talking to you, and enjoy the security that we have as Americans and just want to pretend you don't know, want to know what's going on, and then protest it when you wish to protest it? But then again, you're furious when we're attacked. Eric and I had this discussion again yesterday. We haven't had it in a long time. And it was when they did the 9/11 commission actually did their report. And one thing that was forgotten in the 9/11 commission, well, I mean, it seemed not to be a priority at all. Remember, the whole thing with the 9/11 commission was, we need better intelligence, we need better intelligence, we need better intelligence, we need better intelligence. And Eric and I said right at that point, we said, well, you're missing one thing. Intelligence means nothing if you're not willing to act on it. If you don't act on the intelligence, if you don't preempt, the intelligence means nothing. And that's what wasn't talked about in the 9/11 commission, is the thing that, well, in some of these cases we might want to preempt, which means use military force by preempting. We're not going to do it. Well, you never know. We weren't going to do it, back then. It wasn't talked about much in the media. We talked about it. We need better intelligence. If you're not going to act on it and possibly preempt, and that was part of the 9/11 commission, bipartisan, then it might not matter if you have the intelligence. You have to be willing to act on the intelligence. So it's good to see that the White House stuck by it. I just wanted to make sure that we covered that here this week on the show, so people know exactly what happened. That you didn't have Democrats or Republicans complaining after 9/11 when they said, okay, we need to find out information because we don't know how big Al-Qaeda is. We need to find out where these people are. And this is urgent. We just had an international terrorist group try to take out the Pentagon, try to kill possibly 100,000 or more people in New York City, possibly try to take out the White House, which is where they were, as we know, apparently headed. And so, yeah, this is serious. We've been attacked. It's an act of war. And then afterwards, when everything is fine, oh, we need to prosecute these people. Now we find what they did to be wrong. If they didn't do it at the time, we would have been angry. If there would have been another attack. But after ignoring Al-Qaeda for such a long time, people forget. We didn't know the capability of what they had. We didn't know where their networks were. We didn't know if they're possibly... Do you remember the panic afterwards with the anthrax attacks? Do you remember that? Remember the panic was... I mean, it went on for a couple... went on for probably, what, a good month after 9/11? I remember when we had our... I was doing my local show. And I remember we were in Arlington. And I remember a bunch of fire trucks next door. Somebody had received a package. It wasn't at the radio station. I think it was... might have been at the hotel or something next door to us. But there were fire trucks, you know, what's going on? And it got around that, you know, there was, some package, suspicious package had been delivered. And so what do you want? You got to find out information. And that's what she did. So I'm glad that they stuck with her, because it would have been an embarrassment, I think, to this administration if they had not stuck by here. So I give them credit for doing that. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you would like to get in. I got to remind you, though, that the... because we always want to promote what's going on the left. We're not afraid to promote it. The National Socialist Conference, the 2018 Socialist Conference, is going on July 5th through the 8th in Chicago, according to the website, which is bringing together hundreds of socialists and activists, radical activists from around the country, to take part in discussions about Marxism, working class history, and debates and strategies for organizing today. The cheapest ticket, however, is $50. You have to be a student to get that. Otherwise, you got to shell out in the neighborhood of $225. And that's just for the conference itself. This isn't for the working class, by the way. Hotel's also very, very expensive. The hosting hotel, room rate, $355 per night for the conference, according to hotels.com. Thanks to the Daily Wire for doing some work here. So they mentioned they used the proletariat word too. So there you go. It's the pricing. Student rate. Oh, okay. Student rate, $50. Early bird, $85. The solidarity rate, $150. So, and then there's a $250 rate also. So there you go. You can register now, but it's going to be very, very expensive in order to actually stay there if you want to travel from outside. It's, you know, there. Otherwise, you'd have a very, very, very long ride to get there. So there you go. This year, at least, they seem to be scaling back on their speaker list. None of the listed headliners are much to write home about, unlike last year when the conference boasted a speech from John Cusack. A Hollywood actor who boasts $40 million net worth. So there you go. So if you're interested in going to the socialist conference, there are some of the details. Yes. You can spend the day celebrating Independence Day, and then on the 5th, head to the socialist conference. Yeah, I wish I had the time to go. It'd be fun to go, just to ask questions. Yeah, it's, as I told you, I wish I could be in college again. Just to tick people off. And it's just like the Berkeley report that came out that we brought to you yesterday about free speech. Well, it's hard to defend these conservatives because they incite the liberals to riot. What they say is so wrong that it incites them to riot. It's their fault. See, that's why I'd like to be in college today, because I would just like to, would like to really tick them off. Because I don't believe speech incites anybody. You incite violence if you respond to speech that way. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off, so it's just you and me. If you want to get aboard, we do have a line open. 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, we will get to the breaking story from late yesterday afternoon into early evening. That is the four women who have accused the former, because he resigned, within 3 hours of this New Yorker coming out, the Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman, who resigned. They accuse him of physical abuse, and it's interesting because some of the analysis, legal analysis that's come out since his statement concerning that. So we'll get to that coming up here following the bottom of the hour. Plus, Joe Piscopo, formerly of Saturday Night Live, comes out and speaks about the whole Stormy Daniels situation. And now you've got a few former SNL alums coming out and stating that, look, SNL just isn't funny anymore. They're going over the top. I got to tell you, I just don't watch it all anymore. So it's probably the best way to deal with SNL if you don't like it. Don't watch it, because and I used to be a huge fan of it. If people that are huge fans of it, leave because it's just not funny anymore, you believe it's going over the top, well, then they're going to have to change what they do. But Joe Piscopo coming out with really some interesting comments that we will get to here in a little bit, which really looks at the big picture, which I really love. There's a big picture. There's a big picture that I talk about that I don't like where the country is going, but there's a big picture that I really do like. And we'll get to that coming up in a little bit. And the other thing is just really interesting about the Iran deal and John Kerry. And, we talked about the Logan Act earlier and how the left is just completely quiet, how they went crazy on the Logan Act with Michael Flynn. To the point where, New York Times and others, talked about the fact that maybe they should be charged. That he should be charged, with violating the Logan Act. But the other thing is too, and it was brought National Review brought this up, an op-ed piece in National Review, which is just great about the whole collusion thing. And we sort of brought the collusion thing up yesterday, which was without question, and he admits it, John Kerry was colluding with the world's premier nation that exports terrorism, and he admits he was colluding with them. Wow. And everyone on the left who went crazy about collusion is now completely and totally quiet on collusion. So you've got the Logan Act, but the collusion one to me is even better, because the Logan Act, to be honest with you, I think the you know, I've always thought the Logan Act was unconstitutional anyway, as many other people have. Molly Hemingway had said that earlier in the show, and I went, oh, okay. And I didn't hear I had said it earlier, and then I played the audio cut and didn't know she had said that, and she said the same thing, because it is unconstitutional. And so that's one of the reasons it's probably never been in force. But again, we're going by the narrative that is set by the Democrats. And on collusion, the Democrats went nuts. Well, you can't find more clear evidence of collusion with one of our enemies than John Kerry. And he's not denying it. He admits it. He is colluding with the Iranians, the world's largest exporter of terrorism, to undermine this president of the United States and the policies of this administration. Who's for prosecuting John Kerry? Because we know that you're consistent. We know, if anything, that the left is totally consistent on the issues of collusion. Right? It's time for your national forecast, brought to you by Video Road Log.
Areas of heavy showers in North and South Dakota begin day two of the work week. If you're traveling from Fargo on I-29 over to Bismarck on I-94, or north of I-90 near Sioux Falls, you'll certainly need the windshield wipers this morning. That band of showers will roll through into the upper Midwest for tomorrow as well, and it's a slow-moving system, so we could see some flash flooding associated with the system because, again, today, this particular low pressure and frontal boundary makes its way from today into Thursday, only moving from North Dakota to Indiana. And we could see some flash flooding in the upper Mississippi River Valley as a result as well. 90-degree weather for most of the southern states today, including Dallas, over the 90-degree mark today. New York City, a pleasant 68 with sunshine. 74 for Chicago, thunderstorms tomorrow. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
And the drinking game continues. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
Now, with all the stuff going on, you got to be sober. Yeah. Otherwise, it just becomes an entire blur. There's so much going on. This story from breaking news from last night. Monday evening, four women came forward claiming that while in relationships with New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, we should say the former New York Attorney General, because he resigned within 3 hours of the New Yorker article, which is headlined, Four Women Accused New York's Attorney General of Physical Abuse. He resigned. They said that he assaulted them. The specific allegations, as reported by the New Yorker, were that Schneiderman repeatedly hit them, often after drinking frequently in bed, and never with their consent. Two went on the record with their names. We did more of a in-depth analysis on it earlier in the show, and we'll do it again near the end of the show again. But just want to cover a couple of other things. Two women came forward, gave their names. Two have not given their names. All apparently prominent women. The majority of them, you know, liberal women who very feminist thinking is what the article portrays them as, and initially very, very shocked at how aggressive and violent he got. Now, I was going through some different articles because one of the things that we asked earlier is, these are serious allegations. Some of them happening in what I believe 15, 16, and 17. So statute of limitations aren't up on them. So the first question I had was, wow. I mean, this is Schneiderman is, you know, going after Harvey Weinstein, as we all know, one of the most prominent symbols of the hashtag MeToo movement, recently honored by a major women's group just here in the last week. And now these accusations have come out. And so we asked the question earlier, well, might he be prosecuted for them? And as I said, I don't see why not. I mean, you've got two women who have, you know, come out and said, hey, this is who I am, and this man did this. I expect that there would be a criminal investigation that would go on. In Dan Abrams' website, Law and Crime, there's an article written by Allura Nanos, who, you know, talked about the, you know, the law, the New York Penal Code for assault and sexual assault, either of which could relate to Schneiderman, the Schneiderman allegations. A person is guilty of assault in the third degree when, with intent to cause physical injury to another person, he causes such injury to such a person or a third person. Number two, he recklessly causes physical injury to another person. Or number three, with criminal negligence, he causes physical injury to another person by means of deadly weapon or a dangerous instrument. Assault in the third degree is a Class A misdemeanor. Sex offenses, lack of consent, whether or not specifically stated, it is an element of every offense defined in this article, that the sexual act was committed without consent of the victim. Lack of consent results from forcible compulsion, and then goes in more into the actual acts there. The interesting thing is what she is stating is that Schneiderman's statement comes awfully close, because he responded, comes awfully close to confirming that the violent acts in question did actually occur. She writes, not a good look for the attorney general. If a prosecutor could prove that any of these women suffered physical injury as a result of Schneiderman's reckless, negligent, or intentional actions, he's in trouble. Schneiderman's reference to role-playing was likely his way of raising consent as a defense. And that's the whole point. I want to get to what he said here. Here's what he said. Here's the quote of what Schneiderman said. In the privacy of intimate relationships, I have engaged in role-playing and other consensual sexual activity. I have not assaulted anyone. I have never engaged in non-consensual sex, which is a line I would not cross. And the point they're making here on Dan Abrams' Law and Crime website is Schneiderman's statement comes awfully close to confirming that the violent acts in question did actually occur. Schneiderman's reference to role-playing was likely his way of raising consent as a defense. Consent, legal for you said I could do this, can absolutely be a valid defense to assault if, in fact, the women agreed to being hit or choked during sex as part of a truly consensual role-play. There would be no assault. The problem is, though, that anyone who asserts the, quote, not guilty because of consent, end of quote, defense admits to performing the underlying action. And consent is a finicky defense because to work, it must have been knowing and voluntarily on the part of the person giving it. Even if the person throwing a punch thought his partner had been consenting, he might have been wrong. In such a case, no consent means no defense to criminal assault. The other thing about consent, and Schneiderman must know, is that it has a limited scope. Just because a person consents to one thing, sex, for example, doesn't mean she consents to all the things, being slapped or hit or choked. Again, admitting that he engaged in role-playing as a direct response to accusations of physical assault leaves a door wide open for the possibility of what was naughty sex in Schneiderman's mind was in reality a full-on crime. So that's from Dan Abrams' Law and Crime website. And it just in response to the question that we had asked, or, you know, earlier, because it seemed like, wow, I mean, these are accusations of criminal activity here. And Allura Nanos from Law and Crime wrote that, saying Eric Schneiderman's statement made the situation way, way worse for him legally. And I had said this before. I had read this piece here that I thought that in the next couple of days you would see at least a criminal investigation pop up. And where, who would do this? I don't know. Would it be the jurisdictions where these women claim that they were actually assaulted? Maybe. Would it be the state police? You know, I don't know in this case, because he would have committed these alleged offenses while in office as Attorney General of the state of New York. So, and you remember, I mean, Schneiderman was one of them that came out. And I believe this goes back, and she actually points this out, goes back to last December, where Schneiderman came out and said, you know, they're getting ready to prosecute Trump or anybody else that Trump may pardon, because what they would do was look for any state law that was broken, because Trump can only pardon for federal crimes. And so Schneiderman was one of the ones that came out as early as last December. One of the articles was written where he said, you know, we would look for anything, if Trump does any pardon, anything that might happen in the state of New York, that we would prosecute because Trump can't pardon anyone for any state crime. And so he was also on that. But as we had mentioned earlier from the New Yorker article, that Schneiderman was the darling of the hashtag MeToo movement. He was the one that was taking on Weinstein. And now that's all crumbled very, very quickly after last night's story out there. So I went through the entire article in the New Yorker that was written by Jane Meyer and Ronan Farrow. And after it was written last night, they had the update that said 3 hours after the publication of the story, Schneiderman resigned from his position. He said, while these investigations are unrelated to my professional conduct or the operation of the office, they will effectively prevent me from leaving the office's work at this critical time. I therefore resign my office effective at the close of business May 8th, 2018. So that, I mean, this thing moved very, very quickly. I know when I went to sleep, I didn't know about it. I'd take a nap before I go to sleep before between 5 and 6, and I hadn't seen it. I went to sleep when I woke up, boom, he was gone, and I knew this was a big thing, just because if you want to look at somebody who was viewed as a, not just a symbolic leader, but as an aggressive attorney general who was going after, for example, Weinstein, and you can't get any bigger than that when the Me Too movement, it was him. And the things that he had said, you know, these are, I'm paraphrasing here, some of the worst things that you could imagine is what Weinstein was involved in. And the women brought this up in the New Yorker article, the women that have accused him of these assaults, and that's one of the things that bothered them, that on one hand, they knew that he was a perpetrator, and the perpetrator of doing these kind of things was the one that was prosecuting somebody who was also accused of doing these things, and they said it just ate at them, and they eventually had to come out. So you have two women that have come forward publicly, who the New Yorker, both Jane Meyer and Ronan Farrow, says they have done the research on their stories. They believe that their stories are credible, but they have not yet released the names of the other two women, but four women total, and New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman resigning last night. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. It's you and me. If you want to get in, join me at 866-90-RED-EYE. This from the New York Post, the editorial staff on Schneiderman. Wow. Part of it gets pretty brutal. Eric Schneiderman made the right call in announcing he'd quit as state attorney general late Monday. The New Yorker article that dropped hours earlier guaranteed he'd be pushed if he didn't jump. The allegations against Schneiderman were consistent, credible, and grotesque. His claimed in he claimed in his, quote, "I give up" statement that they were unrelated to my professional conduct or the operations of the office, but that would have never flown. We can thank the Me Too movement, which Schneiderman had publicly praised, for inspiring his victims to speak out. And had he tried to stay on, a credibly accused serial beater and emotional abuser of women was never going to survive his next election. If necessary, New Yorkers would have gladly crossed party lines to defeat him. Indeed, Governor Cuomo was fast out of the box with a statement calling on him to step down. The rest of the state establishment, actually all decent thinking people, would have been close behind. But it's worth pausing here to note that Schneiderman's fall follows the implosions of Elliot Spitzer and Anthony Weiner in increasingly sordid sex scandals, even as each had spent his career moralizing, often condemning the very conduct that brought him down. Oh, and even the so observant Sheldon Silver turned out to be having an affair with one of his members. Every politician has at least a touch of the hypocrite, but something about New York politics seems to attract sociopaths. Wow. The infamous Empire State culture of corruption is sicker than we'd ever thought. And so just, you know, as I've been, again, doing some research on this, you know, because this was the breaking story last night, and I guess, you know, what I was wondering about was, you know, not more about, you know, what editorials were going to say about it, but whether you had any law enforcement agency, and I haven't seen it as of yet, any law enforcement agency come out in New York and say, well, we believe that we've got, you know, some pretty good evidence here to start an investigation, since two women have come forward and given their names and publicly said what has happened, and two other women have given specific allegations of what had happened. So, again, that was my, you know, that was what my, I think, my track was on about where this now goes, because I think there's a good legal case. And as the op-ed piece in Dan Abrams' Law and Crime brought up, because of his response, he's admitted that these actions actually happened. He said they were consensual, you know, in the sex that they had. And so the point was made. He's admitted that the actions happened now, because now we know. He didn't say, no, this never happened. I was never with these people. He's admitted these actions happened, but they were consensual. And so he now sets probably an investigation in motion where, okay, this is where you would take it to a jury. And who do you believe, this guy or these four women? Wow. So there's where we are right now. So we'll keep you updated on that story. Plus, coming up, the new Democratic leadership promoting open borders, a new study, and you will love this one coming up. Plus, yes, still more comments on collusion and Iran and more.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.